Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, folks, this is not Eddie Miller. This is Matthew Goodwin. We have to fight for the mic in these studios, but we've got a very special episode of Blood River Radio where we're live in the studio with a lot of company, a lot of friends. You know, no one's ever accused me of being a ladies' man until tonight, but I've got to say I'm honored to have one particular lady on this show. Her and her husband, we spent 3 weeks going through the harsh terrain of South Africa together, and I love these people to death. Rich Hamblin, Janice Hamblin, thank you for coming on the show, Janice.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. It was a lot of fun traveling through South Africa with you, too. We got to see a lot of things and visit a lot of places and a lot of people.
There's tons of cultures over there. I think they said, 11 different people groups or something to that effect?
11 different languages. So that would you would assume at least 11 different groups of people. But there could be more that just some share the same language. I don't know.
I'm going to kind of pick up from our first hour just a little bit. We were talking about how there's no justice, there's all sorts of corruption and manners of corruption going through our society. What kind of parallels did you see in South Africa that you're seeing here in this country? And what did you see in South Africa that makes you think they're under the same situation there?
Well, I didn't really firsthand see things. I saw things on the news, and it really truly is that if the black population does anything, they can throw rocks at you, they can shoot you, they can rape you, nothing's done, nothing. But as a European person, if you actually go and try to defend yourself, you get the book thrown at you. And that is what is happening in the United States also. Poor boys were defending themselves. They're in jail. Antifa, which is a communist, they're not anti-fascist, they are communists. People need to understand that. They're free. And just like in Charlottesville, they were talking about Charlottesville too. And the people, there's six people, six young men in prison for one is for 400 years and the rest of them are like 6 years. And they were all originally attacked by Antifa, just like Dr. Hill was saying. They were hit with maglites, urine, feces, bricks, cold ice, everything you can imagine. Yet they're the ones in prison, and Antifa has a pass.
So they're throwing the books at us right now, but pretty soon they're going to be throwing the rocks like South Africa, aren't they?
They very well could be. I mean, we're one, just like South Africa, we are one big thing away from having anarchy within the streets. And that's really what South Africa's waiting for. You know, their money could fail, their electricity could fail, which it is. They have rolling blackouts. They also have, they have not maintained their sewer or their electricity. The ANC government hasn't. So raw sewage is going into some of the lakes and more. What would Americans do if that happened? We are used to our electricity. We're used to clean water. We would just go bonkers. And people that are on food stamps and don't know how to grow their own food, they would really riot in the street.
You know, Ben Carson just came out in the news really big. He said something to the effect of, America needs to be careful of our PC culture because it's going to destroy America. Can you believe this? I'm sitting here thinking, here you have a black man who's now recognizing that America's going to get destroyed. Folks, if a black man's recognizing this, what's wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
As an educated man, he's a little behind the times. I knew that when the Clintons were in office in the 90s. I knew this PC was going to destroy us as a nation. We can't go around stepping on eggshells around each other. I'm sorry, but when people are afraid of cotton and they call it racist, milk is racist, I'm sorry, y'all got the problem, not the rest of us.
Yeah, black
pumpkins are racist. I mean,
yeah, we can't they can rewrite history and tell us, and we're supposed to accept this? No, I'm not going to accept your insanity. We've already declared it. It's insane. It's insanity.
It's cognitive dissonance. I got that big word from True Stream Media, and it means that you are holding two views that are on the same subject that are polar opposites, like all our liberals crying and screaming about how these poor little children on the border are being separated from their parents. These people aren't even their parents most of the time. But yet, then they turn around and they want our citizens, both black and white, to abort their babies. They have a complete different opinion on the same thing, safety of children. They are insane. Yeah. And there's 1,000 things you can describe them as being insane about. I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's not just the progressive left communists, because you have to call them what they are. They are not socialists. They are not Democrats. They are communists. And I cannot understand why any normal Democrat would still vote for them. I don't say you have to vote for a Republican. You can vote third party. But I don't know how you can continue to vote for people who want to rip babies out of their mothers' wombs, who want to give free health care, free education, free housing, and Social Security benefits that they did not pay into to people that have illegally crossed our border. And people like me can't afford insurance.
Well, don't you know that the white people came and took all this from all these people? Don't you know that before Christopher Columbus came, that these people had an amazing civilization, nuclear power.
We did not take this land from the black people, and we did not take this land from the Hispanics that are coming up from the South. We did take it from the Indians, but we need to also remember Indian history. They were murdering each other, making slaves of each other long before we came on this land.
This is a public service announcement. We actually paid many of the Indian tribes for the land, and the views of the guest is not...
Well, you're not. Right. We did pay them beads for land a lot of times.
No,
same thing in
Georgia,
South Africa.
We paid them $8 million, I think, for that land.
And it's the same thing in South Africa. There was not what you call the blacks in South Africa when the Dutch got there. There was the little Bushmen. And they did have some skirmishes, and they did have some disagreements, but they also paid them for the land. And they also settled in just different areas. And that was in 1652. I actually saw a deed of land of one of the farmers that dated to the late 1600s, where they had gotten the land. They've had the land in their family since before the Zulu came into South Africa. So how did they steal it from the Zulus or any of the Bantus? They were not in there.
Janice, this is interesting. We'll be right back. I've got so much more to talk to you about South Africa, because you witnessed it firsthand. We'll be right back, people. Get yourself some coffee. Coming to you soon, Blood River Radio. Thank you.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. Then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
My day has been made. We have an honorable guest in the studio, Janice Hamblin, who went with us to South Africa and spent, 28 days?
21.
21 days. Okay, 21 days. Tell me about your experience over there. What was your general experience?
Well, this last time we went, we pretty much stayed in one little town for most of the time, and we didn't get to see a whole lot. But this time, we flew into Cape Town. We got picked up by a couple of men that were with Saitlanders. Simon Roche had gotten in touch with them, and they took us to one of their homes, and we stayed there for like 5 days. They treated us like we were royalty. They wouldn't let us buy food. They wouldn't even let us cook or clean. And they took us around a few places, and then we got to explore the city a couple days for ourselves. And then we had lunch 3 days after that with an actual war hero. It was a war in the 80s. I can't remember the name of it.
I think he was the Rekia, the South African Special Forces, and just a great person.
Yes,
he
was very, very gracious. And then we visited a couple farmers, and the second farmer and his family that we stayed with, they were just amazing people. They run their farm. It's a huge farm, and that's the one that's been in the family since the late 1600s. And the children all help with chores. Boys milk goats. Daughter helps in the kitchen. Helps with the little ones. I mean, and they're hardworking, intelligent, wonderful people. And they have great stories to tell. We got to hear a couple of really good stories about life on the farm with them. And then we went up to Vanderkloof for a couple days and got to meet some more old war heroes, and that was really interesting to hear the stories that they had to tell.
Just a fun aside for the audience, but tell the ladies what kind of the shopping, what kind of stuff you saw, what was that experience like? We did make it by some of the shops, some of the flea markets.
Well, the flea markets were pretty much like our flea markets. They had a lot of stuff. Some of it was really good and some of it was junk. Just like our flea markets, The grocery stores in the big towns were really nice, but you start getting into the really small towns, it's like, this is a grocery store? It's not even as big as what what Little House on the Prairie had as a general market. I mean, they didn't have a huge selection, but everybody was nice and you could get what you actually needed. So it wasn't like you were going to be a hardship or anything like that. But they had, this one town, Brofernut, I love that town. Brofernut at one time produced more than half of the Angora hair for mohair. And so
Angora
you can.
Angora hair? Is that?
From goats.
What are they? They go to barber shops and cut it? What happens?
Well, look, it's growing on goats and they shave it off goats just like you shave wool off a sheep, and it's spun into a very soft, high dollar fabric or yarn. And so I love going there and go shopping. There's all kinds of gorgeous things you can buy there made out of mohair.
A lot of their products around South Africa were built and made in South Africa. And the whole industry you're talking about, this is big money industry here, folks. Yeah. They grow their own goat hair. They grow their own sheep wool. And they make their own products. I think I bought, I can't say it because I got a gift I got to give my little niece. But I'll tell you
another thing, even some of their stuff that is actually made in China, like most of our stuff, was better quality than what you can find in the United States. And I don't know why they get better stuff than we do from China, but they do. But yeah, you could find things that have made in China on them. But also you find a lot of stuff that was made right there with their raw materials.
Right. And this is their culture that they have been quickly losing since the ANC have come into power. Their economy has quickly been decreasing every year. Mm-hmm. I think even Simon said they're losing $1 billion a day. Or something to that effect, in gross commerce, GDP commerce that is leaving South Africa.
Well, when you threaten to take farmers' lands without compensation, which Theresa May of Great Britain said that it was okay to do as long as they passed a law, that sets a really bad precedent for the rest of the world, that any government can pass a law saying they can take any of your stuff as long as they make it a law. But it's, why would you farm? Why would you plant crops or take care of animals or milk cows if tomorrow your farm could be taken from you? And so that's one thing. I think that's one thing Simon was saying. There used to be over 100,000 farmers. Now there is only 25,000 farmers. And that, then you don't have the products to sell. You don't have the raw materials to sell.
You stop being a first world country at
yes.
that point.
And you can tell.
They just can't produce. Yeah.
When you go to some of the smaller towns, you can tell that they were very beautiful little towns at one time, and now they are just, they're derelict. And then even Bloemfontein, which is a pretty big city, and I think it's a seat of the justice or something. And, there's trash on the floor, on the ground. Things aren't cut. Flowers aren't planted, and they all were at one time. So
that's right. And what do you think about the women over there?
The women I met that were Saitlanders, they're very strong, but they also have a very good sense of the husband is the head of the house. She's his helpmeet. She helps run the house and take care of the children. They were wonderful women. I mean,
I remember a prayer on a refrigerator. Could you tell the audience about that?
It was a housewife's prayer, and it went through all her duties that she had to do as a housewife, that really, instead of being drudgery, she should be thankful she has him, because that means that she has a husband to take care of and children to take care of. So that was the gist of it. It's all in Afrikaans, so I really can't read it.
Right. I want you to give this is not so much about South Africa, but tell our young ladies in the audience here what you recommend for them to make their futures better.
I think they need to quit buying into the lie of feminism. Feminism is a Jewish invention to destroy families by destroying us as women. The greatest gift we can ever do is to be a helpmeet to our husbands, be good wives, have children, and to take care of our children and our homes the best that we can. That is the highest thing that we can ever do, and I would say that any young woman needs to stop listening to feminism, telling us that you need a career to be fulfilled, that you need a job never will fulfill you as much as happy children and a happy husband. Never.
How much of this garbage is coming from TV?
Oh, a lot of it. Not only are they teaching us that men are stupid, but that...
white men.
Yeah, white men are stupid. Race mixing is great. And they're not. The most unhappy people... Colin Kaepernick is a great example. Some of the most unhappy people are mixed. They're neither.
It's true. All the ones I've met my entire life, it seems like they're searching for direction because they don't have any type of foundation at all. Zero. I mean, the best ones I've met are the ones who have gotten into a church and claimed Christianity. But even I've only met one of those or two of those, you know, in my whole life of all the mixed people I've met.
But TV, movies, and music are doing everything they can to destroy our culture.
Janice, thank you so much for coming on our show.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Yes, thank you, thank you. Anytime. Folks, we'll be right back. Thank you for joining us today on Blood River Radio, and we'll be back with another dynamite guest.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
More than medication is being collected during today's National Prescription Drug Take Back Day. For the first time in history, vaping devices and cartridges are also being accepted for disposal. The Federal Drug Enforcement Administration says the change stemmed from concerns about illnesses and death associated with vaping and the high rate of vaping among young people. The agency helps to get unwanted prescription drugs out of circulation, and now it's going a step further to combat an emerging public health threat. More than 1,600 people, many of them teens, have been sickened by the national vaping illness outbreak that appears to have started in March. At least 44 have died. The Houston Astros took Game 3 of the World Series against the Washington Nationals, tightening the series a bit, with the Nationals still up 2-1. Game 4 is tonight in Washington with Jose Urquidy for Houston and Patrick Corbin on the hill for the Nationals. This is USA Radio News.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand and you care about your credit, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it'll take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 6 million people with credit card debt. Without destroying your credit, they can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. The program works. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-406-0046. 800-406-0046. That's 800-406-0046. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services, Inc. 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM 1492. Oregon DM 80092. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation. Commission License Number DC 83. Service may adversely affect an individual's credit. Non-payment of debt may lead to additional finance charges or collections activity, including legal action, not a loan company.
An Arkansas hunter dies in an unusual accident. USA's Chris Barnes has the story.
The hunter was killed when he was attacked by a deer that he had just shot. Fish and Game officials say 66-year-old Thomas Alexander shot the buck while hunting in the Yellville area. Recently, the deer reportedly then attacked Alexander when he moved closer to inspect the hit. Doctors say his death could be the result of those injuries or from a heart attack he suffered when the deer attacked him. I'm Chris Barnes.
The federal deficit for the 2019 budget year has now surged to $984.4 billion, its highest point in 7 years, and is widely expected to top the $1 trillion mark in the coming years. The 26% surge from the 2018 deficit of $779 billion that the government reported reflected such factors as revenue loss from the 2017 tax cut and a budget deal that adds billions for spending in military and domestic programs.
This is USA Radio News.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, hello, everybody. This is Keith Alexander, Eddie Miller's friend and compadre on the political cesspool, and he's asked me to fill in for him briefly interviewing Kevin McDonald. Kevin McDonald is a former professor at the University of California system. He's now retired. He's written a lot of books that are authoritative on the issue of Jewish power and influence, and his most recent book, I'm going to let him tell you all about it now. Good to have you on the show, Dr. McDonald.
Hey, it's great to be here, Keith. My most recent book is Individualism and the Western Liberal Tradition. I talk about evolutionary origins. The subtitle is Evolutionary Origins, History, and Prospects for the Future.
Okay. Well, I understand it has to do with Indo-European-derived people. Explain that to our audience and tell me why that's significant.
Well, the Indo-European is a very important group. There are three groups, really, that came into Europe. But the Indo-Europeans dominated Europe, really, from 2500 B.C. to the Middle Ages, a very, very militaristic group, a very intelligent group. They conquered half the world. I mean, they went down into India. They went into Western China, Iran, all throughout the Middle East. They were an incredibly successful group, and they imparted the sort of Western spirit of adventure, conquering. Of the whole thing was wanting to leave a sort of legacy of fame of a dead man's deeds, as it says in one of the Icelandic sagas. One of the Norse sagas, you know, in other words, the most important thing was to establish a reputation as someone who was a successful warrior in life, and that your deeds would be remembered after you. And they were militaristic deeds. They did not prize anything else. And for a man to make it in that culture, they had to be a warrior.
Now, that's one of the groups, and that may be the predominant group of people that settled Europe. What are the other groups?
The other groups are the Middle Eastern farmers, about 8,500 years ago or so. And I don't regard them as important, frankly, for European culture. But the other group are the hunter-gatherers. They're primordially 40,000 years ago. This is very important in recent times. I think they reemerged. So the big argument of the book is that these are genetically based tendencies in these different groups, that the Indo-Europeans had a very militaristic, aristocratic worldview. They created these very hierarchical cultures based on military conquest. But the hunter-gatherers are much more egalitarian, much more interested. The groups were held together not by kinship, but by reputation. And so if you're an honest, trustworthy person, people gravitated to you, and that you could be part of the group. That's the basic idea.
Well, tell me, do these hunter-gatherers predominate in any particular part of modern-day Europe?
Well, my view is that they reemerged after the Reformation, fundamentally there was a revolt against the Indo-European aristocratic worldview, and for good reason. I mean, their aristocracy had some good points, certainly, but they were also corrupt. And, you had conspicuous consumption. Most people were basically starving. They were, virtually almost slaves, or they were slaves. When these people look back, they eventually won with the English Civil War in the 17th century. When they look back on the Middle Ages, they saw it as a period of oppression, as a period when they were basically enslaved, and that the modern world that they were creating was a much better world. And it probably was in many, many ways. I mean, the aristocracy was famously irresponsible, and they were not really on the side of the people for the most part. I mean, there were some good aristocrats, and I talk about a few of them. And the old Roman aristocrats back in the Roman Republic were very responsible, civic people, very upstanding. But and King Louis in of France and in the I get all emotional talking about King Louis. This 12th century built Notre Dame. I should live like a saint.
Was he Louis the First?
He was Louis the Ninth of France.
Okay.
And he lived like a saint in 12th century France, lived like a monk, led crusades to the Middle East to free the world from the Holy Land from the Muslims.
Was he a great warrior, like
a warrior king,
the Lionhearted?
Yeah, a warrior king, but very Christian. Had a lot of children. Never had mistresses or concubines or anything, and lived a very Christian life in the Middle Ages.
Set a good example, in other words.
Yeah. So, but there were, you know, those kind of aristocrats were few and far between in the end, and I think the English Civil War proved that, you know, that they were not seen as on the side of the people for the most part, and so there was a popular rebellion against that.
Well, let me ask you this: Madison Grant, when he wrote The Passing of the Great Race, broke Europeans into several groups: Nordics, Alpines, and Mediterraneans. Does your taxonomy of these people, does it correspond in any way to Madison Grant's, or is it totally different, or are there similarities?
I think there's similarities. You know, certainly with the Nordic, I view Europe as having three groups, basically. Western Europe is having three groups, with the Nordic, Scandinavians, being different from the Germanic peoples, and being different from the Southern Europeans. This is something that's been corroborated not only genetically by the population genetic evidence, but by if you look at the family history data, the Southern Europe much more collectivist, and genetically they much more resemble the Middle Eastern farmers that came over. So if you go down to Sardinia, 95% farmer ancestry. You go the further north you go, the more Indo-European, the more hunter-gatherer.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is that the Indo-Europeans were the Alpines, the Middle Eastern farmers were the Mediterraneans, and the hunter-gatherers were the Nordics, basically.
It may well be sort of like that. But, you know, I didn't consult Madison Grant's typology or those older typologies. I consulted the modern population genetic evidence. Very clear about that genetic decline, and that's what I was trying. And then when I looked at the family history, you could see the Germanic peoples were different from Southern Europe, but they were also different from Scandinavia. Scandinavia was more individualistic, and so it really seems to me the heart of European civilization were the Germanic peoples, that they were the ones that were most inventive and the most exploratory. They were the ones that really, in the end, produced the modern age.
Well, the Vikings, though, would have come from Scandinavia,
yes,
right? And we had the Age of the Vikings. They were the supreme warriors of their time. Of course, yeah. The Age of the Vikings is very short, from 800 to 1,000.
Yeah.
And I remember having a conversation with a Scandinavian once, and he said, well, what did they contribute? I said, well, they contributed their genes. Mm-hmm. They spread their genes far and wide, and that's the reason we have beautiful blondes all through Europe. Now, let me ask you this. If I understood you right, you felt like the Indo-Europeans were the superior warriors out of this,
yes,
group of three, right? How do you explain the Vikings?
Yeah, the Vikings really are should be considered an Indo-European group. In Scandinavia, there were also a strong hunter-gatherer genetic component. And my view is that these people were not predominant. I mean, the New Europeans, in my view, and I have a little footnote, a little speculative, because I try to get really factual and based on everything, but on the data. But in this case, I speculate a little bit. Because these hunter-gatherers held off the farmers, because they kept coming up from the south. They held them off for 3,000 years. And apparently, my view is that they had a big battle with the Indo-Europeans, which they lost. But the Indo-Europeans won that battle and did dominate Scandinavia. But they didn't eradicate by any means the hunter-gatherers that were there previously. And then when after the Reformation, the Protestant Reformation, the individualistic egalitarianism kicked in dramatically in Scandinavia.
Well, that's great. I hear music that makes me think that we must be coming up on a break.
Yep, must be.
Thank you.
Ooh, that's quite some music there. Yeah.
I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
How do you know your child loves you?
When he calls and he says, Dad, why don't we go fishing? Just very simple, but it really counts.
They make a song up and they come into our bedroom and say, we made a song and will you listen?
Our next youngest daughter came to me with tears in her eyes and she said, Daddy, I just thank you for coming home every night when we were growing
up. My son does the nicest things. When he's playing outside, he'll come in and just give me a hug and run right back outside.
My daughter goes to the same high school that I'm the registrar at, and I'll go into my office after the bell has rung, and there's a note on my desk. And it'll usually say, Mom, I love you. I'm thinking about you.
And I think of my boy that we finally got him through graduation, and he came up to me and said, I made it. Thanks.
Family. Isn't it about time?
That's all I said. And that meant everything to me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Abby Johnson was once director of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Bryan, Texas. After a moral crisis, she quit, and now she campaigns against what she once endorsed.
They implement abortion quotas in all of their clinics.
What do you mean, quotas?
You have to perform a certain number of abortions every month. One of the reasons that I left...
Are they explicit about that?
Yes. It's in your budget, right there on the line item. One of the reasons I left Planned Parenthood was because in a budget meeting, I was told to double that abortion quota. And for me, as someone who had spoken to the media and had said, you know, we're about reducing the number of abortions, we're about, you know, prevention, all of these other services, I was shocked to
hear
that.
You actually worked at a Planned Parenthood, give us some sense of the relative number of abortions.
Okay. Abortions, Planned Parenthood provides over 330,000 abortions a year. They are the largest single abortion provider in our country.
Welcome back to Blood River Radio. We are thrilled to be on air with y'all tonight. And we've had quite an interesting show tonight. There's been quite a lot of fascinating people who've been on before me. And we have another excellent guest with us here in the studio tonight, the one and only Mr. Keith Alexander. And Keith, for those of us in our audience who may not be familiar with your pedigree and your many years of excellent work in the movement thus far, would you introduce yourself a little bit and just tell us a little bit about what you do? And
okay, well, I'm a lawyer by profession. I was a member of the Council of Conservative Citizens. Basically, I was encouraged to join that by a business colleague, and found that I was dissatisfied with the success rate, for example, of mainstream conservatism. They didn't seem to be conserving anything, and I was looking for an alternative, so I got involved with that group back before 2010. Then I got involved with the Political Cesspool radio show, and I've been with them ever since.
Fantastic. So the Political Cesspool and, of course, the Council of Conservative Citizens, was that what you actually cut your teeth on, or do I understand correctly that you'd been doing advocacy for the movement writ large for quite a while prior
to
that?
Well, I was a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, things like that, and I definitely had a conservative bent of mind and was opposed to a lot of the liberal innovations that have occurred over the last 60, 70 years. And it was that that really animated me. And then it just seemed like the conservatives were losing every battle, and I felt that we needed to do something different. We needed some stronger advocacy organizations to carry the message forward, because the people that were the self-appointed guardians of our society and culture weren't getting the job done.
So as someone who is a lawyer by trade, what do you make of the talking point that's definitely gained a lot of traction in our circles in recent years about how the rule of law in America, certainly, and the West in general, is very much threatened, really, not to be overly dramatic in the language there, but I mean that's basically the talking point that most people will acknowledge. And as someone who is in the legal profession yourself, I mean, what do you make of that? Do you think that's a bit hyperbolic, or would you agree that that's pretty on point?
Well, I think it's on point. I think that you now are in a position where you cannot skirt issues, you can't try to be euphemistic, you can't think that talking about the Electoral College or about the Constitution and things like this are going to prevent the transformation of our society in a very major way. Basically, we are facing white genocide, I think. I've come to that conclusion now. That was, you know, when you say that, people roll their eyes and say, for real? You know, where are all the bodies? Well, a lot of the bodies aren't being born because of the strategies of the left. What they're doing is they are recommending multiracialism, which we euphemistically call multiculturalism, but it's only recommended for white nations, nations of Europe and the Anglosphere for the most part. Anglosphere are English colonies and things like this, like the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the former Rhodesia, South Africa, and others, and then all of Europe. We're the only people that are required to open our borders for non-white immigration. We're the only people that are told that diversity is our greatest strength and that we will have better societies. There are a lot of other first world economies and nations in the world, but this non-white influx is not being recommended for China, for Japan, for Korea, for Saudi Arabia, for Kuwait, and other prosperous nations. And it's hardly, you know, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that it's anti-white. There's something they want to do to the white race, and I think what they want to do is exterminate whites. You know, and I think it charts from the mid-30s when a Jewish Marxist named Magnus Hirschfeld wrote a book called Racism. Before that, the term was unknown. If you, in the mid-20s, called somebody a racist, they thought you were talking about racing boats or airplanes or cars or something like this. There was no racialist meaning to the word racist. In fact, the word was unknown. But they found out that that word was dynamite and that it tapped into a real strong animus in a lot of non-white people. And the cultural Marxists decided that Marx and Engels got it wrong. The real fault line in human society was not class divisions between rich and poor, Marxist and, proletariat and capitalist or something like that. It wasn't even religion. It was race. And that's what they've been working on ever since then. And now they're coming out of the closet more about what they're doing. And, for example, I think that racism will only be defeated when the last white person is dead. They now have come up with this idea of white privilege, which means that white people are guilty of racism unknowingly. You don't have to have any special animus or any special hard feelings towards any other race or group in order to be a white racist, because you are the beneficiary of white privilege. White privilege is kind of like a virus that all white people carry with them. And they have reduced our numbers. In 1960, whites were 90% of the U.S. population. Now they are 60% and going down. And they say, according to UN demographic projections, by 2042, we're going to be a minority. And when we become a minority, I think we will find very soon the difference between being a protected minority, which blacks and Hispanics and others are, and being an unprotected minority. They're already talking about reparations, which will lead to land theft and wealth theft, just like it has and is doing now in South Africa and the former Rhodesia. We're going to be facing all that. That's the canary in the coal mine. Now, Americans act like they're very concerned about the plight of Europe. Well, as Ann Coulter said, that's very sweet of us. But actually, we're twice as far down the road as they are. We're 60% white. They, for example, France and Germany, two of the most liberal countries in Europe that have let in more foreigners than any other countries, they're still at 80 to 85% white.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, Keith, because, I greatly enjoyed hearing you speak recently, and that was possibly one of the most electrifying things I heard you say in that whole speech, was the comment that you made. Because typically, I mean, I know I use it as a talking point quite a bit, where, we'll cite Europe as an example of how they're a good decade or two progressed beyond America in terms of the implementation of the Marxist agenda and whatnot. And yet, what you're talking about here, I mean, what Keith is talking about here, folks, is a cold, hard statistical reality that however much we may say that Marxism is more advanced or pronounced in Europe, here in America, statistically, we are feeling a greater measure of that cancerous influence on our society.
Well, we're the only group that is voluntarily ceding our cultures and our lands and our possessions to racial strangers. And race is, according to cultural Marxism, the primary fault line in human society. It's not religion, it's not economic class, it's not a lot of other things. And this is what cultural Marxism is built on. And communism has gone the way of the wild goose, basically, but cultural Marxism is growing in power and transformational reality more than any other theory has done. It is destroying Western nations, and it is an irresistible force unless white people regain the sense of racial solidarity that our ancestors had.
Mm. Now, I mean, it's not every day, folks. We're working on it, but it's not every day that we're able to have credentialed folks in the studio here with us, like a lawyer to discuss these issues with. And like I said, we're working on it. But, this isn't every day. And so for the benefit of our audience, the left is very fond of gaslighting us and acting as though we're the ones proposing really absurd off-the-wall notions and talking about something like white genocide. If we could apply this to a courtroom situation and you were dealing with an opposing attorney across the aisle from you, and he's scoffing and sneering at this notion of white genocide that you're talking about, the moment where you say, "Objection, Your Honor," what would you be saying in that moment in a court of law?
Well, I would say that everything he's saying is hearsay, and we are presenting facts. And we can set the proper predicate and bring those facts before the bar, and that's exactly what we're doing. You know, it doesn't – see, the left obfuscates. They mislead. They misdirect. They minimize. They tell you that you're foolish. For example, when you complain about racial intermixture, they say, well, the races are already mixed. Well, a 1% mix is not the same as a 50% mix, okay? And that's what we need to understand. We need to – you know, they ask you, don't believe your lying eyes. Believe us.
Well, folks, that's our cue. We have unfortunately reached that time of night where our show has come to an end. We wish we could stay on air with you a while longer and talk with Keith some more. We'll have to settle for next week, however. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. It is always a pleasure and a privilege to be on air with you. Thank you for supporting this show and for listening. And God bless each and every one of you. Keith, thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
And we look forward to fellowshipping with you all on air next week. This has been Jacob Tyler. Thank you. Y'all have a great night.